Are all batteries the same? That's like asking if all soccer players are the same. Take Messi, the most decorated player ever. Is there any other player who has achieved that? No, just him. Now take Duracell. Is there any other battery with power-boost ingredients inside? No, just Duracell. Remember, goats only trust goats, because they're built different. And Messi only trusts Duracell.
So good, so good, so good.
New summer arrivals are at Nordstrom Rack stores now. Get ready to save big with up to 60% off brands like Rag & Bone, Levi's, Adidas, and Free People. Join the Nordy Club to unlock exclusive discounts, shop new arrivals first, and more. Plus, buy online and pick up at your favorite Rack store for free. Great brands, great prices. That's why you rack.
This is Climate One. I'm Greg Dalton.
And I'm Arianna Brocious.
On Monday, Pope Francis died at the age of 88.
The Catholic Church's first Latin American pope was known for his humility and efforts to make his religion more inclusive and welcoming, especially around social issues like same-sex marriage.
He was also a climate leader. In honor of his passing, we're rebroadcasting a Climate One episode from 2015 that focused on the pope's views on climate and humanity.
In 2015, Pope Francis wrote a landmark encyclical on climate change and inequality called Laudato Si. Laudato Si means praise be to you. The subtitle was On Care for Our Common Home.
I remember it causing quite a stir at the time. It was a big deal, and there were lots of hopes about what this message from the pope would do. The pope's message took aim at our culture of consumerism and the devaluing of nature. He called for the world to move away from coal and oil without delay. Pope Francis also took a swing at unfettered capitalism and technology, calling them out as root causes of an ecological and moral crisis.
10 years ago, when he published this paper, politicians were swift to push back. Rick Santorum said the church should leave science to the scientists. Jeb Bush said, quote, I don't get economic advice from my bishops or my cardinal or my pope. In that same year, Pope Francis visited the U.S., where he had a private audience with President Obama, and was the first pope to address a joint session of Congress.
Ahead of that historic visit, I had a live conversation at the Commonwealth Club with three guests. Reverend Canon Sally Bingham, an Episcopal priest and founder of Interfaith Power and Light, a religious response to climate disruption. Sam Liccardo, who was the mayor of San Jose, California at the time of the taping. He currently represents part of Silicon Valley in the U.S. House of Representatives. And Father Paul Fitzgerald, a Jesuit educator who was president of the University of San Francisco during this taping. He stepped down from that role last year. Welcome to all of you. Paul Fitzgerald, tell the story of Pope Francis, who he is, where he came from. There's been a lot written about this pope, but people may not really know that he was different before than he is now.
Jorge Mario Bergoglio was born of Italian immigrant parents in Argentina, grew up, became a Jesuit at a very young age, and then at a very young age was promoted to be provincial superior of the Jesuits in the Argentinian province. And as he reflects back later, he was too young and too inexperienced, and so he ruled with a pretty firm, if not an iron hand. He was novice master, he was provincial, he was director of formation, so he rotated around various positions of authority and responsibility. It was during the time of the generals and the dirty war in Argentina. People were being disappeared by the police, people were being killed. And so it was a very difficult time for the Jesuits and for the church as a whole. He later became Archbishop of Buenos Aires. And if you read his stuff, he's conservative, very orthodox, very much in line with the thinking of Pope John Paul II and Pope Benedict. And when he was elected pope, it may be like some Republican presidents who appoint a Supreme Court justice and then are a bit surprised by how this person begins to rule once she is on the bench. And we have seen in these last few years a magnificent soul. We call it the grace of office. He is kind. He is generous. He is welcoming. He has washed the feet of Muslim women. He's doing all kinds of what I would call symbolic prophetic actions to ask the church and the world to think again about us being one human family.
Sally Bingham, what has been the impact of Pope Francis outside the Catholic Church, other faith traditions?
Well, I've been working for 15 years on a religious response to global warming, and we've been, all of our preachers and teachers have been talking about the moral responsibility that individuals have towards the future. We've talked about individual action. We've talked about trying to influence politics, but particularly the moral responsibility that we have for the generations that come after us. So to have Pope Francis get in his pulpit and say the same thing, you know, it's been an amazing boost to the entire religious community, because our group, which is interfaith, we are with Jews and Muslims and Christians of all kinds, and we have Jains and Hindus and Sikhs, and they're all been working for all these years to try to implement change in terms of how the U.S. responds to the climate problem. And with the Pope coming out, giving a statement that was essentially for all people of conscience, not just for Roman Catholics, we are exalted. I mean, everyone is just jumping on this message to say, see, we told you so.
The Pope says that it must be true. And Sally Bingham, also, there's some lapsed Catholics. Tell us about a couple that wanted you to marry them.
Oh, this was very funny. It happened recently. About 3 weeks ago, I got a call from a young man who wanted to be married at the Fairmont Hotel and couldn't find a priest to go to the Fairmont and marry him, and would I do that? And I said, yes, I marry people on the beach, and I marry people in the Muir Woods. And he talked to me for a little while, and then he said, you know, I think my wife might have some difficulty with this too, but I'll let you know. And 3 weeks went by, and I never heard from him again. And then I got an email, and it said, we've decided to be married by a Catholic priest. Thank you very much for your help. And it was pretty much over. In 2 days, I got a telephone call from the bride-to-be. The fiancé called, and she said, you know, we love Pope Francis. And we might even get back into the Catholic Church. But while they're doing this, they're trying to find a Catholic priest who will go to the Fairmont and marry them. But they couldn't find one. So they have rehired me. So I'm now going to the Fairmont to marry this couple. But they also think that they may start going back to church largely because of Pope Francis.
So you got hired, fired, and rehired. Okay,
that's right.
Yeah, good. Sam Liccardo, you went to this big meeting of mayors in the Vatican, and the Pope did this very deliberately, calling on mayors as an important area for action on climate change. So what did you learn there? What happened? Must have been pretty exciting to be there.
It was exciting. It was a real privilege for me, and I'm a big fan of this Pope, so it was certainly doubly a great opportunity. I was one of about 65 mayors or so from around the world to join this meeting. It was a great opportunity, certainly for me, to learn from other mayors of large cities that are out there innovating, doing very creative things to try to move the needle in reducing greenhouse gas emissions and protecting the environment. So from that standpoint, just professionally, it was certainly a lot of fun and exciting, but certainly the opportunity to hear from Pope Francis. A group of us had an audience for about 30 minutes, and he spoke in Spanish, and that meant I understood maybe 2/3 of it, but it was good enough for me.
So pretty cool. One of the key tenets of his encyclical is integral ecology. So, Paul Fitzgerald, tell us about that and how new that is, what it means. Integral ecology is one of the key philosophical touchstones of Pope Francis' encyclical.
Since the 1890s, the Catholic Church, Roman Catholic Church, has had a series of encyclical letters that come out from various popes, starting with Leo XIII. And all of them, and this Laudato Si by Pope Francis, is the most recent in a long string of letters that each one builds on the last one. And they're based on a profound and fundamental insight that our religious convictions should inform every aspect of our life, including our relationships with those whom we love, our participation in our city, in our church, in our world, and that everything is connected. This comes back again and again and again throughout the encyclical Laudato Si. Everything is connected. And there's so much of modern life and Western culture that is fissiparous. It's fissiparous. Everything gets broken into small pieces, and we think of our lives in these very small, discrete compartments. You know, with this group of people, I behave this way. With this group of people, I behave that way. When I'm at work, I dress this way. When I'm at home, I dress a different way. And the danger is we become really schizophrenic. We're divided into so many different personas. And what the Pope is calling us to is simply to be profoundly persons of integrity and to close the largest gap ever measured by human beings, the 14 inches between the heart and the brain. So that what we know in our hearts, deep down, we know we can never lie to ourselves in our hearts. With our brains alone, we can make up all kinds of excuses and rationales for any kind of bad behavior. But what we know in our hearts and then what we understand with our minds, what we say with our words and what we do with our hands should all be the same thing. And so the way we inhabit this planet with all the human persons, and he keeps calling us back to a care for the poor, but also then care for the other living beings and care for the ecosystems, that's integral ecology, but it's just an integrated human existence.
Sally Bingham, one of the phrases in the encyclical says, quote, many things have to change course, but it is we human beings above all who need to change. He's asking us to do some hard work, every individual.
Every individual, and I think that he has invited us into the communion of life, that we are all part of one big universe, and every one of our behaviors affects our neighbors who we're called to love, whether it's the coffee we drink or the clothes we wear or the energy we use. Every single thing we do affects another person and the planet.
Sam Liccardo, how do you actually implement this in a city? We're running a big city. You know, what does this mean? So most politicians don't ask their voters to change. They say, like, you're going to deliver something, right, to do this
yes.
work.
That's and a tough most one. Voters would regard me as being the person on the stage with the least moral authority to change. But, you know, building on Sally's point, you know, the Pope is not suggesting that this is a technological problem that needs a technological fix. He's talking about an adaptive problem that requires a complete shift in cultural paradigm, a revolution of sorts in how we think and act in our daily lives. And so that's not an easy sell in politics. And, you know, he's not looking for us to come out with the solution of spending more money on, say, carbon sequestration and just solving this issue. I think the question is, how can we, as community leaders, engage our community in actually doing the much harder work of understanding the extraordinary lifestyle shift that's required here?
Big lifestyle shift. In fact, when Paul Fitzgerald says connectedness, use connectedness in Silicon Valley and it means something totally different.
Yes.
Right? It means, where's my Wi-Fi and why don't I have it, right? And
perhaps the opposite.
Yes. Right. And Pope Francis comes out pretty strong, challenging the sort of the cult of technology. And Mayor Liccardo, you run the city that's the heart of Silicon Valley. He's taken a swing at Exxon and Apple.
Yes. Yes, yes. In perhaps in extreme view, you might say I'm the mayor of Sodom in that sense. But reality is, you know, we recognize that there's not simply a technological path out here. At the same time, I'm a mayor. I happen to have a bit of a bias in favor of technology. I think there's a lot we can do. And certainly, for example, if we're going to retrofit a city that's been built around the automobile to one that's built around people, technology is going to help. And there are things we can do certainly to help with that transition. But that doesn't take anything away from the fundamental truth that I think Pope Francis has hit here, which is this is a moral issue. It's really, this is a symptom of something far greater, and we all need to take a closer look at ourselves.
Paul Fitzgerald, you run a university that's full of technology-addicted students, probably. You know, how do they square this challenge of technology with their daily life and culture?
So at the University of San Francisco, we have about 11,000 undergraduate and graduate students, 1,200 full and part-time faculty and another 1,200 full and part-time staff folks. So we're a small town compared to San Jose, California. We're a very small town. But we've made the pledge as a university campus to be carbon neutral by the year 2050, and we are well on our way. We're well below our, we're bigger than we've ever been, and you know, below our 1997 carbon footprint. So part of it is we've just opened an office of campus sustainability, and we have a person in the middle who's talking to facilities and to our faculty and to student life so that we offer a holistic education by example, as well as, you know, we have wonderful faculty in the classroom teaching on climate policy, teaching on, you know, what are the technological fixes. You know, Pope Francis is not a Luddite. He's not asking us to go back to the pre-industrial revolution. At the same time, he warns us very clearly that, you know, if in our great, great generosity and love, we wanted to bring the rest of the human population up to our level of consumption, we would kill the planet in a week. One North American is as much weight on the planet as 250 Somalis. So, you know, ours, here in North America, ours is not the normal, typical, common experience of human beings on the planet. The normal, typical experience of human beings on the planet is in a much, much poorer, much more modest, much more environmentally fragile system.
So how to address poverty without trashing the planet, Sally Bingham?
Well,
in 30 seconds or less.
But I think the issue of poverty is such an important one, and for the faith community, because the people that are hurt the most by this big subject that we're all talking about, which is climate change, are the poor people. They suffer the worst first, and that we as almost responsible for the destruction and the sea rise and the droughts and the wildfires and the refugees that are having to move because of a lack of resources in their homes. We are the folks that, and I think this is what the Pope is calling on that maybe disturbs some folks, is that we have a moral responsibility to look after those folks, put up money for adaptation, put up money for mitigation, and help them develop. I mean, we can't, there are 300 million people in India who have no access to electricity. Now, we can't say, well, that's too bad. You can't have the electricity the way we've had it in the United States and Western Europe. But what we can do is subsidize some renewable energy for the places in the world that maybe don't have to go through first coal and then oil and then fracking, that we could help out with renewable energy to start with, just the way many people in India have cell phones now, but they've never had a landline. Mm-hmm. Now, perhaps we can go with wind and sun and help them do it, though. They're not going to be able to do it on their own. So I think that we can certainly help the poverty situation by trying to supply the means to help these folks have electricity, have food, have water, through the generosity of the developed world.
Mayor Liccardo, there's also poverty in America, poverty in Silicon Valley. There's a great wealth gap in this country. It's probably the biggest issue in this country, along with climate. So what are you doing in San Jose to address that underclass?
Well, we're trying to do a lot, and the reality is there are larger forces beyond the power of City Hall that really constrains what we're able to accomplish. Last week announced that we're trying to engage regionally with 15 cities and towns throughout the county to raise the minimum wage together so we don't just have a patchwork of different rules. We've just last year and in prior years we've passed various fees on housing development so that we can generate funds to build more affordable housing. You know, there's a host of these kinds of policies that we put out, and we think we're going to be able to help a few hundred folks, maybe a few thousand folks at the margin. The reality is that the gap between those who are prospering in this great boom and those who are being left behind is growing. And you know, it may well be that more than half of us are the ones falling behind. And so this gives us a certain moral imperative to think more deeply about what exactly we can do from a policy standpoint to try to bridge that gap.
Paul Fitzgerald, Pope Francis, is in his encyclical, really goes after market capitalism, which is driving a lot of what Sam Liccardo just talked about. But first, tell us about Francis himself. He was quite a radical himself, you know, communed with flowers, perhaps the first flower child or hippie, you know.
Bernard loved the mountains and Dominic the valleys, Francis the small towns, and Ignatius the big cities. So Jesuit University, we like big cities. Francis of Assisi would go into little country churches and pick up a broom and sweep them out and clean them up. He would preach to the flowers and to the birds and to the wolf of Gubbio. He had this profound sense that the divine was within and underneath and present in every living being and in every beautiful vista. And so brother, sun, sister, moon. He had a spirituality which was deeply Christian and what we would call in fancy theological language panentheistic. So pantheism is that everything is God. Panentheism is that God is in everything. There is no human person where the spark of the divine is not within her soul. There is no living creature. There is no beautiful vista where this spirit of the divine is not available to us to be encountered. What Pope Francis is doing is, most of all, and Reverend Sally Bingham said this earlier, Pope Francis is suggesting a spirituality, and that's where the letter really comes together in the closing chapters, is he's suggesting a spirituality, a way of us understanding our relationship with God, with ourself, and with all of creation that is loving, and that is joyful, and that is fulfilling. So many people these days, even with great wealth, you know, we become distracted by our devices. We walk into poles. We go to the emergency room because we hurt ourselves. kids at my university, they're in the dorm room. They're back to back, and they're texting each other rather than just turning and talking. And, you know, this technology can divide us, and it can flatten out our lives. Adolfo Nicolás is the general superior of the Jesuits, based in Rome. And he's talked about the globalization of superficiality. The globalization of superficiality that comes with a poor appropriation of the wonderful possibilities that are contained in high technology. High technology can do a lot of good things for us, but it can also do some bad things to us if we're not mindful about what's most important.
Sally Bingham, the Muslim leadership recently came out with the first unified call on climate change. What did they say, and what's the significance of that?
Well, the significance is that most of the religions, whether they're evangelical, Christian, Roman Catholic, the Catholic bishops, rabbis, the Jewish community has come out, all saying we need climate control and to cut carbon emissions. The Muslims have never done this. They've never had a statement where several imams were in agreement and where it was an official Muslim statement. So it means a lot to the community, the entire interfaith community, to have the Muslims on board with the rest of us. And it is quite significant.
Paul Fitzgerald, some people think that this moral frame is very important for social movements. Pope Francis has put climate change in a moral frame. How does that compare to other social movements, and what's the significance of that?
If we think about the civil rights movement, if we think about all those movements that have animated this country, giving women the right to vote, it's been about asking the people who are in a position of power and authority, especially if they are a minority and hold lots and lots of power, to voluntarily give that power up, share it more broadly. And that willingness to cede control and to enlarge the circle greatly takes courage, but it also takes, I think, some sort of transcendent inspiration. There has to be this recognition that these folks who have been previously excluded because of their gender, their skin color, or nowadays because they live in the third world, and are not at the table in the first world where the big decisions are made, that we recognize their humanity, and there's a certain shame in ourselves that we had denied their humanity so long. And that's why it's difficult, right? Because, you know, when we enlarge the circle broadly and bring in people who had previously been excluded, it means that we had been in excluding and exclusive and unjust. And so I think there is a sense of conversion, a sense of repentance, and then a sense of liberation and even joy that comes through that cycle. But I think the great social movements have involved, you know, both people on the outside asking to be in, but also people on the inside opening the door and saying, yes, it's not you and us, it's us, all of us.
Sam Liccardo, how do you translate that into action and that kind of social movement into San Jose?
You know, putting into action, I think, you know, the typical response of elected officials is to say, okay, let's go pass an ordinance or a measure that's going to change something. But, you know, the spirit of the encyclical, and I think going to Paul's point, is really that this is something that the entire community has to engage in. And engaging a community is much harder work. And it requires an awful lot of opening up, certainly of education, and also admitting that you don't have all the answers. And that's a hard thing for elected leaders to do. So we are right now, over the last several weeks, we've been spending some time talking internally about how can we meaningfully engage the community in San Jose, both in terms of behavioral change, but also about informing us about what might be a good path to follow as a community. Do we as a community choose, for example, community choice aggregation for deciding where our energy should come from? Or perhaps do we choose a path that is more determined by individual choices? Those are the kinds of things that it takes a lot more work. And it's usually not a recipe for electoral success, but I think it's certainly something we all need to do.
Sally Bingham, speaking of electoral politics, how do you think Pope Francis changes the politics of climate in the United States? 30% of Congress is Catholic.
I think there are 137 Roman Catholics in the Republican Congress. So I'm very hopeful that if they really are faithful Catholics and that they believe in the infallibility of the Pope, which I guess some still do, they will take this to heart. And when you opened and talked about Rick Santorum saying that he doesn't listen to his Pope for his economics or his...
Jeb Bush doesn't listen to the Pope for economics.
Right.
Yeah.
That perhaps it's time they did do that. But I do think that there will still remain the deniers who will dismiss the Pope because they don't want to go down the path of cutting our fossil fuel use. But I may be naively optimistic, but I think it's going to make a difference. I think he's already made such an enormous difference in saying in the encyclical that we needed to cut back on fossil fuels. And the entire Green Group, the big secular environmental organizations, are using Pope Francis now to make the changes or help make the changes that they've been preaching and teaching about for the last 25 years. And I think that he's breaking a lot of boundaries, and I think that his message is going to seep through to enough people that we will see change.
Is there a risk of breaking too many boundaries? We have this church and state thing in this country that, so you start to blend faith and politics, that makes some people nervous. Sam Liccardo?
You know, if I could just, I don't think we have to blur those boundaries. I mean, the good news is that the overwhelming preponderance of scientific expertise out there just happens to agree with the church in this case. This is not the situation, say, with Galileo. We're in a position now where we've got a pope who's saying, look, we get the science. Now it's a moral issue for us. So I think the good news is we don't have to somehow or another blur those lines. I think we can appropriately say the scientific issue has been largely resolved. Mm-hmm. Now it's really a question for how we respond as a community.
Paul Fitzgerald, the way some states are responding is to divest from fossil fuels. The state of California is in the process of selling its coal assets. Divestment is a big issue on college campuses around the country, mainly focused on coal. It can move to oil. How about the University of San Francisco? Is divestment an issue there, and what is the school doing?
Yeah, we have a $300 million, well, depending on the stock market, a $300 million endowment. We have some investment in power in energy companies, but those are with great portfolios, and then, you know, we can do kind of activist shareholders stuff to move them in the right direction. As I mentioned earlier, we're also working very hard to green our own campus. And so in the encyclical, towards the end of it, the Pope talks about these small, simple gestures that we can do on an everyday basis. You know, a person who adopts a small urban space, a fountain that's been let go, or, you know, someone who turns off the lights. And this, there are these really small gestures which become habits, which become then a praxis and an intentional way of living. So at the University of San Francisco, what we're trying to do is create a whole culture where, as we graduate our students, they've gained this habitus, this habit of being environmentally very, very sensitive. And I hope they would choose then pathways that would make them change agents for the better, informed citizens, going into the business world, going into public policy, going into science and healthcare, but looking for ways for us in every practical way to lessen our carbon footprint, but doing so always against this really broad picture of, well, what about the least advantaged human beings on the planet? And that's what the Pope, I think one of the nice things about this letter is that I think this is the first time in such a systemic way that a world thinker, a world leader, is linking climate change and the necessary changes in our behavior to care for the poor, the global poor.
Sam Liccardo, fossil fuel companies will often say fighting climate change will raise energy costs for low-income Americans. It will hurt the poor. Is that true? Can you fight climate and help the poor at the same time?
I think you can fight the climate and help the poor, but it can still also be true that it's going to raise energy costs. And I think we have to have the courage to accept the fact that we've had really cheap energy in the United States for a very long time, particularly relative to other industrialized nations. And we could probably live with a little higher energy costs in order to reorient our economy.
I want to ask each of you, when you think of climate and stewardship, is there a particular scripture that you think of, Paul Fitzgerald?
I loved how Francis quoted Matthew, you know, that the lilies of the field and the birds of the air, you know, are beautiful, and God knows each one of them, and invites us to have that same sense of awe and wonder at the beauty of the world around us. Something that you know, as the climate has changed and as the Bay Area has developed, you know, it's further from us. It's further from me than it was 50 years ago in Los Gatos when birds and animals and nature seem so much closer and so much more available.
It's a lost connection. Sally Bingham, a favorite passage?
Yeah, my favorite is the first commandment, to love God and love your neighbor as yourself. Because if you love your neighbor, you're conscious of how your behavior affects your neighbors. And for me, that's I expand the word neighbor beyond the person that lives next door or sitting next to me. Our neighbors are the next generation. Our neighbors are the flora and fauna and animals. And if we love our neighbors and operate out of love and understand that however we behave is affecting our neighbors, this is a wonderful scripture site for care for creation. Because creation is all of us too. I mean, it's everything. And if we care about everything and treat everything as a neighbor and love it, it'll make a big difference.
Sam Liccardo?
I know I won't be quite as good at this as my colleagues
here. Professionals, yeah. I've got two professionals right here. Playing in the big leagues here.
Yeah, I just think about the Sermon on the Mount where, you know, blessed are the poor in spirit, they shall inherit the earth. There's a certain connection that Pope Francis makes between how we are treating the earth and how we are treating fellow human beings, and a connection to the extent that those who are the poorest are most deeply impacted by environmental damage as well. And there's, I think that connection bears out as well in the sermon.
We have to end it there. We've been listening to Paul Fitzgerald, president of the University of San Francisco, Sam Liccardo, mayor of San Jose, California, and Reverend Canon Sally Bingham, president and founder of Interfaith Power and Light. I'm Greg Dalton. I'd like to thank you all for listening here in the Commonwealth Club and online and on air. Thanks for joining us.
This conversation was recorded in 2015 after Pope Francis published his encyclical, Laudato Si. Pope Francis died Monday at the age of 88.
Climate One is a production of the Commonwealth Club. Our team includes Greg Dalton, Rad Marshland, Jenny Park, Austin Cologne, Kusha Navadar, Megan Basilia, Ben Testani, and Kevin Lemons. Our theme music is by George Young. I'm Ariana Brocious. Thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by Google Chrome. You think you know a browser, but Gemini and Chrome? That's new. It can help you with practically anything on the web, like restoring a vintage motorcycle from a 50-page restoration blog, or finally break down that long article you've had open for weeks. Gemini and Chrome is here for it. Ready to make anything online make sense? There's no place like Chrome. Check responses, setup required, compatibility and availability varies, 18+.
When you finally find your thing, you want the whole world to know about that thing. So you use a thing called Canva to make it an even bigger and better thing. Whether you want to create flyers for that thing, make presentations for that thing, or design merch for that thing, you can do anything. So people can see your thing, feel your thing, love your thing. The next thing you know, it's a thing. Canva, the thing that makes anything a thing.